Hello and welcome to episode 83 of And this episode is a chat with Paul Tylak, who is my oldest friend. I mean, he's not my oldest friend. I have friends who are older than him, but we go back a long way, as in 30 years when we met out one night in Captain America's. And the meeting is, we talk about it during this chat. And in comedy, he's by far my oldest friend because we started doing comedy together when there wasn't any comedy clubs. And we all that's in the chat, of course. And it was great to catch up with him. So much we could have talked more. We could have talked about him. Perhaps we'll just talk to him. We'll talk again. At the moment, I'm lying on the bed in a hotel room in Bangkok. Would you believe it or not? I am here, but as I said before, when I did one of these links from a farting place, I could be anywhere. I could be just sane, but I haven't really seen much of it yet because I flew from Ireland on Saturday morning at 7:30, but I didn't actually sleep the night before because I was packing and doing my feckin' tax returns and moving flat and malarkey, and I had an hour's sleep, so I thought, oh well, you know. So I flew then for 7 hours. I did sleep a little bit. I wonder how much, maybe 2 or 3 hours, 4 hours possibly, and then 2 hours in Doha, a layover, as they say. And maybe nodded off for a bit there, and then another flight, 6.5 hour flight, and I slept a little bit there, but not on that. But it's not the same anyway, is it? You're sleeping in a cramped little fucking seat. So I arrived here and then got to the hotel. But of course, I realise I'm arriving into a hotel at 9 a.m, so my room wasn't ready. So wandered down and had squid and noodles for breakfast. And then I slept a bit, and then I got up and did a gig, and it wasn't a great gig because there was a few very tired, drunken people at it. Came back, did my tax returns in the hotel because I had to have them in, and I conked out sometime in the morning and just slept all day. So I haven't fucking seen anything. I just conked out. I just was. That's how I conk out, and got up this evening and did a good walk around. But of course, you know, I can't do that. Still haven't done. You know, haven't seen the sights. I've just seen the market and the people wandering around, eating, offering new food to eat. Scorpions on the street, people. That's a thing. I wonder, should I eat a scorpion just to say bucket list? I've eaten a scorpion, but then I feel like a twat going. It's what every tourist does. But yeah, fuck, maybe I will. All I've eaten is curry and squid. And I'm going to go out and eat now. And I'm going to try and find something that isn't a curry. Let's do that. Because I'm sure your body reacts if you're just a curry eater. And I'm pretty sure that people here in Thailand don't eat curry for breakfast, or they probably have rice though, for rice in most meals. I don't know what their breakfast is, to be honest, but I'm going to go out now and find some food. I was out wandering around with a fella from South Africa last night and his girlfriend. He brought me for a meal, and the whole vibe is, oh, you can get anything. You can get anything here in Bangkok. Whatever you want. Whatever you want. A midget, whatever. It's nuts. Apparently, you can get anything you want. But I could have paid someone to come to my room and done my tax returns. And it probably would have been probably the most unusual request ever. from a person coming to Bangkok. But I didn't. I did them myself. So I'm definitely doing a gig tomorrow night and then another gig. I'm going to Pattaya, and that's supposed to be mental. But I'm getting sleep tonight. I'm going out, eating, and getting sleep, and I'm going to see some sights. Yeah, definitely. So anyway, here's an old friend of mine, Paul Tylak. Enjoy. How are you?
How are you, Joe? How's it going?
You all right, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, not too bad.
Good, yeah. You're heading off to do a gig later, is there?
Going out to Kerry to Causeway with Kevin Gildee.
Causeway?
Yes. You did that before. I did it with you one time.
In a bar that only opened at the weekend or something. Was that Causeway?
It might have been, I don't know, yeah. It's open tonight anyway.
Right, yeah, or only open Thursday, Friday, Saturday or something. Yeah.
Well, I think you might have done it since, because... He was asking me to get someone else.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I haven't a clue. Anyway, he asked me to get someone else, so
yeah,
he asked you. So. So Paul, we obviously go back a long way.
Yes,
a long way. How far back? Over 30 years.
Over 30 years. I think I met you when I was 18 or 19.
Yeah. You were 18, 19. Yes,
you were in Guernica.
22 or 23.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how much older I am. Yeah, I'm about 4 years older. Yeah. And I was in a band called Guernica, yeah. And do you remember the night we met? Was quite interesting.
Captain America's.
Yeah.
Tom
Cook, the manager of Guernica, introduced us, but you pulled out a squirty water pistol.
Under the table, I had you at gunpoint. And then you
A water pistol as well. It was quite amazing.
Yeah. So that kind of tied us together for life.
Cemented our relationship.
Yeah.
And that was funny times, though. I mean, like, let's think about it. We used to hang out a lot and just do mad shit around town. And we'd no money, I guess. No,
we used to go to parties all the time. We were on the dole. We never had any money, but everyone always had parties and they always had a good time. Managed to make do and have loads of fun and get up to loads of shenanigans with no money, just your dole.
The dole. Just get money or clothes in Oxfam. Even shoes.
Everything. Yeah. Fully clothed by secondhand shops.
And then we started getting wigs a lot in secondhand shops.
Yes. I still have some of them.
I probably have one or two.
And we had the Quack Squad comedy duo we were doing for a good while.
Yeah, we did that for a while, but like before that we used to hang out and I was in the band and then you supported the band.
Yeah, I'd go on in between bands. Like I remember you did a gig with the Baby Snakes
The Baby Snakes. Yeah.
So you were on first.
Guernica and the Babes.
Baby Snakes. There might have been another band, maybe a house as well. I don't know. Yeah. There was a few.
In the Bag It In.
Yeah. But it might have been just you and the Baby Snakes, but... Yeah, I went up in between and just did mad stuff.
And like we had Sean Hughes and another guy on one time, maybe twice in the Underground.
Oh, yeah.
They were called the Short and Curlies.
Short and Curlies, yeah.
And then you did...
He loved Guernica as well.
He loved Guernica.
There was a lot of us now. We were big fans of Guernica.
Guernica.
Those days.
Not enough people. But
not enough to keep you going.
Yeah.
And when you seen us spending the cash to come into the gigs, you were going, what do you do? And we said, we're comedians. And you said, okay.
All right. Yeah, that's how I started. Well, no, I don't think so. But I remember one night, definitely in the Bagot. I'm pretty sure it was the Bagot Inn. You did a whole set in Sri Lanka.
In Sri Lanka. Well, it was like fake Sri Lankan. I knew some of what I was saying and the rest I just made up. And I was
hilarious.
Telling knock knock jokes and stuff. Knock knock. It was like Mata Danet Nane Makata Karane. Knock knock. Who's there? Mr. Fitzgerald. Yeah, Boruk Yenipa.
It was so funny.
And my whole head was shaved, I remember.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I was doing that.
Right, yeah. And that was that was before we started.
But before I knew how comedy worked.
Ah, no, it was hilarious. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously some people didn't really get it.
Yeah, I think it was before there was anything like stand-up or anything here, really. Like, I mean, there wasn't, certainly wasn't, the International hadn't started, you know, was a couple of years before that. And I think once the International started, even then people were just doing, like we were doing sketches, Fat Man's Picnic Basket were doing sketches, Trellis. Doing sketches. Dylan Moran and a couple of other guys used to get up and do sketches as well.
Oh, yeah. He came a lot later. We're talking, I mean, okay, it could be just a year or 2 years, but it seems like a long time.
Would it have been 1990 or something like that? Would that mean 89? In the International, anyway. But before that, you and me were doing gigs wherever we could get them as the Quacks.
Yeah, and our first ever gig. So and even before we did gigs, we kind of would get a tape recorder and start recording.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, because, we always
random shit.
Messing with, like, doing interviews and stuff. Yeah. Like, and ads and that kind of thing, yeah.
And then we got a call from Tom Cook, the manager of Guernica, one night and said, there was a club that Gavin Friday ran, right?
Oh, yeah.
You remember this? This is our first gig, I think.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. It's in the Waterfront, and the club was called the Screaming Blue Jays' Club or something, Gavin Friday.
And him and Googie, they do little songs in between and stuff as well, didn't they?
Yeah.
And they had the Hothouse Flowers on
the night we went to. But we didn't have a... So we had a... Maybe 2 hours or an hour to get a set together.
Right? Yeah. We'd nothing.
And I remember the nerves because I'd never done anything like it. And we stopped for a pint on the way to calm ourselves.
Yeah.
But then we drank a whole bottle of wine as well.
At least, yeah.
At least maybe one each.
I think we had some spirits as well, maybe.
Yeah. I remember some of the lines. Well, I remember one line was... You did a Native American Indian. You said how or something. And I was like, where do you live? And you said, a teepee. And I said, that must be intense or something like that. And
okay, yeah. I'm not proud of it. Not ashamed of it either. But I remember we got very drunk.
Really drunk.
And then we went back on stage when the Hothouse Flowers were playing because they were getting really boring or something. No, I can't say that. we were bored because we were very drunk, and
we were ridiculous.
We ruined their set. We went up and started singing with them, and taking the piss. And I think we were dragged out of there by bouncers.
We were actually forcibly removed from the premises.
I remember they
without any violence, just carried out or something.
I remember a coffee table smashing or something.
Yeah,
like
that was even before we went on. I think
that's how drunk we were.
We were sitting down. Gavin Friday was there going, these people are absolute, just they're bastards. They're just fucking bastards. And just treat them like that. Your audience, yeah. That was his advice.
But he really enjoyed it afterwards.
He did.
Was saying, I thought that was brilliant. Yeah. It was really real. We were just pissed.
Yeah. So anyway, that was just our first thing. But we didn't do that for a while, and then we did random parties.
Yeah, I think the first party we did with Connor Kenny filmed it, and we did a party in. It was just someone's party, and then they said we want a bit of entertainment, so I don't think we even charged them because we wanted to do it.
No, I don't think so. It was a good party to get.
And we did that interview. It was like, I was saying to you, you were, you'd invented something. And I was going, newfangled. And I was saying stuff to you and you're going, no, that's a load of bollocks. I never did that. It was some kind of celebrity interview or something.
Oh, yeah?
I can't remember. But it was very funny at the time.
I remember doing the interview where we were talking about to a hairdresser and he was doing hair extensions.
Oh, yeah.
Hair extensions. No, hair extensions. But, the weird thing is about how did you end up in Dublin? Like, you're like. You were a
My mum and dad got divorced when I was 11. So I was living in England, like, from when I was born, because I was born there. And then Well, the whole story is that my mum kind of went a bit nuts when I was a few months old, and she just left me on the floor of the kitchen, according to my dad. And then he was working, so he didn't know how to handle a child, because she just disappeared. She went up to Birmingham or something with some friends of hers. And basically, he put me into care in Bernardo's in Dulwich. And I was there for 8 years. I thought I was only there for 5 years, but I found out through the Freedom of Information Act about where I'd been kept through the local council and all that. And it was 8 years I was there.
You were in
so
there.
So I only knew my mum really properly for about 3 years before they got divorced. Because they got divorced when I was 11. I got out of there. They brought me out of there when they got back together when I was about 8, basically. And they seemed to sort themselves out. And then I was in this new house with these new people for 3 years.
So you didn't really... I didn't know that about you. I didn't know that.
I was in a home for 8 years.
What kind of home?
It was a children's home. It was in a big house that had been converted for Dr. Bernardo's children's home. So, yeah, I was in there for 8 years.
And did you see your parents during that time?
No, I'd never saw my mum. And then, in the last year I was there, this guy kept visiting, this dark gentleman who always looked really neat. And I remember one week he said, "What's your favourite colour?" And I said, "Orange." And he said, "And what kind of toys do you like?" And I said, "Teddy bear." And the next week he brought an orange teddy bear.
Wow.
And also a bow and arrow. I thought he was saying a bone arrow, but it was a bow and arrow. And he shot it up at the ceiling, and it stuck to the ceiling, the little rubber arrow. So I remember that. I thought he was great.
Mm.
And then, it turned out he was my dad, and we moved into a place in Streatham, actually.
And you were 8 years old?
Yeah, 8 years old.
How does that... They weren't really, you hadn't... bonded with them as parents
at all? No, yeah. And I was ended up being terrified of my dad because he was quite a strict, authoritarian sort of figure, very and a bit mental as well. And my mum was all right at the time. She was very, she'd give me hugs and everything, but she was a bit nuts as well. And then they got divorced, and then so I used to come over to Dublin on holidays every summer from the age of about 11 till I was about 17, and then I just left. I was supposed to go to college in England, but I didn't. I just came to Dublin, and first I stayed with my mum, and then I moved out because.
Where was your mum?
She was in the North Circular Road at the time,
mm-hmm.
and she was going out with this Chinese, lovely guy, Chinese guy called Davey,
mm-hmm.
and but she was drinking an awful lot. And I'd never seen her like that, when I was younger. So I had to move out eventually. And yeah, then I moved to Fairview. I was living in the Crescent in Fairview, next door to Bram Stoker's house, apparently, according to a plaque. Yeah. With a couple of lads from Arklow. I lived there. And that's when I started kind of going to gigs and stuff like that. And
you were at what age? 18.
I would have been about 18, 18, 19,
And you just started going to see bands? And
yeah, just going into town and just going mad then, from then on, till I was about 30. I'd say. I don't know,
And so you hadn't really, you were very much on your own then, weren't you? So it was basically you're making... I'd say the friends that we had in common maybe were your family.
Anne Butler was my first proper girlfriend, I suppose. Right. And I probably met a lot of people through Anne. And Kevin Lynch. And I mean, you were doing the ISPCC as well for a little bit.
Collection, yeah.
Yeah, I know Tom was doing it. That's how I met Tom. Mm. That's how I kind of... started going to Guernica gigs then. I remember he was saying, "You've got to come and see this band." And he told me the lyrics of this song. He was going, "I want to go deep sea diving into ocean blue eyes." And I just thought that was such an amazing lyric. I was going, "I've got to see this band." Yeah, that's how he... soldier, wow. basically.
Yeah. yeah.
And he was great. I thought he was just such a funny guy as well. Great guy, Tom. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was really into the band. He wasn't just a manager. He loved the band.
Yeah. I remember you were very upset when the band broke up. I was delighted because I thought you were the funniest guy I'd ever met. And, yeah. you know, I was like, now he can finally do comedy. I was going, you can do comedy. And you were going, no, a fucking 10 years of my life I've put into this band. Or was it five years? Yeah, I knew it was a multiple of five. Mm. And
yeah,
you didn't really want to do comedy at first. And then you got really good at it. So you were already good at it, but you got more disciplined about the work and stuff.
Right, okay.
And I got less disciplined after that.
For a while.
Because I remember we used to meet up to write, and I'd say, do you want to go and play pool?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? We're supposed to be writing new stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I can't kind of think at that time I didn't accept anything that came up casually or was good enough that you almost had to sweat at it or something. Mm. Do you not feel? I don't know. I certainly would think back now and go, I just should have just gone with the flow a bit more.
Yeah. No, I think you were pretty good at that. I think we were a good mix in that way because I was really into things that just happened. Like, because you'd say stuff, like the way we would write stuff is we'd tape it or whatever. And or else, you know, if I thought you just said something really funny and then you, the next time, you'd have forgotten that you said that and you said like a different, I was thinking, but that was really funny the way you did, because you'd throw really funny lines away.
I used to find that with you as well.
Yeah.
I used to go, oh no, I don't know. I remember lines and I go, no, the way you said it. I used to find the same.
So I think what it is when you're performing stuff or whenever you're doing stuff, your own inner critic is your worst enemy. So you kind of always, you're always editing yourself, whereas other people can see the magic that's actually coming out. So that's probably why it's good. Double acts are really good that way because they can kind of keep, and I suppose with Foil Arms and Hog, like a treble act, they can, three of them can be going, no, that's really good. No, you got to keep doing that.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if you're, and it probably is much harder for a one man act if you have that inner critic, you know.
Yeah, that's completely, like what I used to love about it, before we ever performed even, was just sitting down, turning that tape recorder on and just improvising.
Yeah.
I used to be doubled up laughing.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just amazing.
Yeah.
And then listen back to them.
So mad. They were really mad.
Yeah.
I suppose because we weren't constrained by what we thought people wanted to hear or what we thought should be funny.
Yeah.
You know. I think we both probably, I mean, I know I kind of grew up on Monty Python and Woody Allen and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if you were as strongly into all that.
Yeah, Monty Python, not as much. I didn't see as much of it. I only heard the albums. And I would have, Derek and Clive.
Yeah, but I think you were naturally, I don't think I was ever, originally I don't think I was naturally funny. I used to work at it, trying to be funny or do, like I remember when I was in school, I used to get bullied, but obviously if I made people laugh, like that kind of, that was such a great buzz that I felt like, yeah, from now on, I just want to make people laugh.
Yeah.
But I felt like I had to work at that. But I always thought like you, like, you know, we've loads of videos and stuff of like you talking to cows and stuff. It's just, you know, like unionizing the cows. Like I have stuff like that on
have
video
you?
From like anytime we went on like holidays and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like we'd get away from our girlfriends and just go and like film stupid little mad things.
Yeah.
But I remember you telling me when you were living at home on the farm, you used to sing to the cows.
I used to sing, and they will listen, like, but they look confused.
Are they appreciative? Or?
Well, they definitely will stand there. I mean, I guess they're bored. They're in a field all day, so any form of entertainment.
Yeah, yeah.
is something for them to watch.
Yeah.
But I used to sing to the cows as well. I used to wonder about past lives and if people came back as animals. So I used to sing different, I used to maybe learn some classical piece and not learn it on an instrument, just sing it and see if any of the cows pricked reacted up their ears and I go, wow, it could be Mozart.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Or Buddy Holly or something like that.
Yeah, you know? Try all the different styles of music to see which cows reacted. Probably a good thing if you were selling the cows. Like, this one is the reincarnation of Elvis.
yeah. Oh, man. But I tell you what the worst thing about, I mean, let's say we were enjoying ourselves and then you start doing gigs and they're great and everything. Mm. But I think it was really kicking the arse when we started doing gigs down the country or outside of the little area in Dublin.
Yeah.
And people going, what's this shit?
You know? Even outside the international.
Sometimes.
Because they're not really comedy audiences, so yeah.
And if I was to go back in time, I would say to me, don't mind that audience.
Yeah.
Don't try and cater to that audience.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think I kind of did a bit. Or we started curbing our madness. What do you think?
I think you kind of have to in a way. Like, there's so much stuff that I've written that I like that I just know won't go down well with a general audience.
Yeah.
That I don't do it as much. And I've relaxed a bit more about it, and I think I'll try and do more stuff just for myself.
Mm.
But at the same time, you feel like your contract with the audience is to make them laugh as well, to an extent.
Yeah, but do you not feel... I feel that as well. I mean, maybe you come around to... Maybe it's my age now that I'm going, I'm fucking... Don't know how long I've left on this planet. I want to do stuff...
For me.
For me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so...
Yeah, well, I'd like to do more character stuff because that was my first love, was always characters. And that's what I loved. That's what I've always loved generally. That's why I do... Like, you know, when we started, I'd always try and do different characters and stuff, you know, and you would as well. We'd have, you know, that was the most fun because there wasn't necessarily any gags in doing these funny voices and stuff. It was just the way you talked or the way you expressed yourself. And I think that's something that has got lost with the way a lot of comedy has gone, that it's gone kind of just pure stand up, be yourself, just talk about your life and that kind of thing. Which is a great thing to watch, but I think...
But it's not... It's even something that I didn't like at the beginning. I remember going to see the first few comedians that would come over from the UK and I
was... I like the way you did quotes there. Comedians.
yeah, I did. And I was disappointed sometimes.
Yeah.
Just talking about kebabs or something. And
yeah.
There's no... Madness, but there's loads of great acts. I mean, obviously, that do mad shit, but there's sometimes where I mean, when I started doing stand up, for example, I was going, people don't want to hear my voice, just me talking.
Well, it took me years to get used to the sound of my own voice. When I started doing like actual stand up, I wanted to just break out of doing characters and be myself, and then I could do little characters in between, like, you know, describe people and then start doing them and that kind of thing. But the actual in between bit of me talking, I found really almost impossible. Like, I hated the sound of my voice. I just thought it was really boring, like a really boring voice. So then I understand that. Yeah, but you know what I mean? I read up about it and I made tapes. This book said, hey, Paul, what you need...
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that book.
Yeah, but it was like, basically, you need to just be confident in your own voice to the extent that you feel like that it's... That you actually love the sound of your own voice. So you do these affirmations. I did for a while anyway.
And you've got a great voice, you know.
It was probably because I grew up in England and then I came to Ireland and I probably feel like a fake... You know, my voice, because like I had a London accent when I first came here. So it's probably I think some actors have that thing where they kind of go like, well, I certainly, my uncles hate and my cousins all hated me talking like that when I was in Northside Dublin in Cabra.
Yeah. I met you, did you talk like that?
I was half Dublin by that stage.
Right. OK.
Yeah. Probably took about a year. And then, but I don't know. I think it's just like wherever you are. I was worried when I went to New York for 6 months, actually, that I would come back with a New York accent. But luckily, I didn't.
Yeah,
I think it's just that phase in your life.
Yeah, but there is a thing like I have as well. I say when I'm doing the intros to this podcast as well, I get fed up talking in my own voice and I start talking like that.
Oh, yeah.
I just keep going in and out of voices. Know.
But you do that anyway. Like, if you're talking to people, you just go, yeah, I might just go and park my car.
Do I?
Yeah, sometimes you do, yeah. Just because you're just bored of yourself.
Yeah, so I think there's a possible... If I was going to say, there might be some kind of... a thing where you're just you want to be out of your own skin or something like that, but I've always felt like that.
It sounds weird, but I think I was quite shy.
Self-esteem thing, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I realized when I was doing characters, I could really like blow an audience away by, and I loved that feeling. And I didn't like going back to the normal talking kind of thing because there wasn't that kind of buzz about it. Anymore. Like, I'm much more confident being other people. And even now, I'm much more confident telling other people's jokes. Like, not live on stage, but to other comedians. I go, oh, did you hear your man's joke? It's fucking brilliant. And I tell them the joke and get a massive laugh. But I wouldn't be able to tell people my own jokes private. You know, I'm much... Because I know that this is... I know this is funny. I've heard this person saying it and it's brilliant and it's funny. I'm probably selling it by saying that as well, you know. And I just think you're just generally not as confident in
it's
your own abilities.
It's a weird thing, though, because I think both of us have picked up our each other's accents as well. Because a lot of people will say we sound very similar.
Yeah.
People probably think I'm just interviewing myself here on this podcast.
You are. Alicia, my wife, was even says to me, that was just like Joe, the way you said that. She really sounded like Joe there. And then and
people used to say
I probably
to me,
picked up you more than you picked up me because you were more of a stronger individual. Like I definitely you were only picking up yourself then because I was copying you.
No, I might have picked up a slight English accent off you because some people do say, "Have you got? Did you live in England?"
Yeah,
I don't know.
I remember you saying to me that you could tell I was English by one word that I said.
Mustache.
Yeah. Mustache.
My ex Sandra says banana as well.
Okay. There's bath too, I suppose, but some people say bath.
But
too.
I was talking to Lisa Casey from Dundalk.
Yeah.
And recently, and she's got such a strong Dundalk accent, but then she said, I dropped something on the carpet. The carpet.
Oh, right.
That's a Dundalk accent, apparently. Okay. It's not, she's not got any, they say carpet.
Yeah, yeah. I love accents. So, I just with voiceovers and stuff like that, luckily I'm in a job where I get to do loads of accents.
Yeah,
like
you're
with that animation
really
and,
good at them. Much better than me, but there. But like people used to say to me, and we look very different, I would say, but they would say, are you cousins?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it was...
I'm half Sri Lankan. And you're full, like...
I'm sure somebody said, I was talking to your brother the other day. Mm. Oh, people used to call me Paul.
Yeah, yeah. And I was called Joe a few times. But I think that is actually quite common because I think with double X, people are, you know, people who are always together, people often get them, their names confused. They just always, you're in your head, you always think of them together and you forget which is which.
Yeah. But I think even before we did the double act, I remember you got a gig on a thing called Megamix.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, Sean Hughes did it before you did.
Yes.
It. And
then he went to London, was that
London.
It?
Yeah. And
it
was.
He might have even been on one or two of the shows before I. Before he left, I think I might have done a couple of the shows with him.
Really?
Yeah. I was just a waiter in the background the whole time.
And
like I wasn't.
You got a few bits, did you? Comedy bits?
Just visual jokes. Like I used to take people's money, like because I was a barman, and I would like put 20 quid in my mouth and then I'd give them change out of my mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that. Like just something to do in the background.
We got a bit together though when Guernica were on it.
Oh yeah, what did
we
do?
We did a ridiculous introduction.
Did I interview you? Oh, it was an introduction.
We did. I know we did something that ended with both of us going diddly bop at the same time.
Okay.
Do you remember?
And that was actually our first Quack Squad sketch without us knowing it.
One night, I don't know if it was the same night, maybe, but I was down there because you were doing the show and it to explain it to anyone who doesn't know, it was like a Top of the Pops type show, or the Tube, maybe, on Channel 4.
It was in Christchurch.
Recorded in Christchurch, and the bands played, and it was presented by Flo McSweeney and
Kevin Sharkey.
Kelly Baggs. And Wet, Wet, Wet were on one episode. And I don't think I was... I think I was just down there because you were there and you got me in backstage. Right, and there was... I was hanging... I was talking to Wet, Wet, Wet backstage.
Marty, they were, they weren't... Is it Marty?
Marty Pello. They weren't Pello, huge at the time. Okay, I kept making really big... faux pas with them because I didn't realise they were being sued by somebody for a song that was slightly ripped off or something,
right?
Or similar to another song,
yeah,
maybe by Van Morrison.
That's weird because it's so original.
And I kept saying, I mentioned two of their songs. I said, that there's another song called that as well, isn't there? And I was and they were like getting really edgy, but and then a lot of the acts would go down to the Pink Elephant was the club to go to.
Yeah.
And I went down there. This is when we had no money. And I went down with loads of people and I pretended I was in Wet, Wet, Wet. So the waitress came around and went, wait, 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 wait. Can I order a drink? And the manager's coming down in a minute and he'll pay for the round. I ordered like two rounds of drinks for loads of people.
Right.
Then I had to run away.
That reminds
Because they never arrived.
You're good at pretending to be bands because remember we were trying to get into the limelight in New York and the Commitments were in town.
Yeah.
So we pretended we were in the Commitments because we were being all polite and saying, yeah, we're just some friends in there. And they were like, no, man, sorry, you can't.
Yeah, but it was very easy to convince them you were in the Commitments. Just go, here we are.
Yeah, and we go, let us in, you fucking bollocks. And then they let us in. Oh, okay, you're with those guys. But my highlight of Megamix was meeting Shane McGowan in there. Like, he was just hanging around after he'd been on, and I thought they were Irish. I just thought that he was Irish.
Yeah.
Like, because he was so Irish when he sings.
Yeah.
You know, so Dublin when he sings.
Mm.
And I was like, hell yeah, I think your stuff's brilliant. And he was like, oh right, yeah, thanks very much. Like, yeah, this guy is fucking from London.
So we went to New York. You just reminded us we got five gigs in New York.
Yeah. Oh, the Pyramid Club.
Oh, the Tell Pyramid them about the Club. Oh right. So we were doing a double act and we did a song called The Mucky Mud. We were doing stupid stuff. Wearing wigs and going, I'll eat the Mucky Mud. But we were booked into our first gig was booked in the Pyramid Club and it was a night of kind of poetry and very serious stuff.
Beat poetry. Yeah, there was a guy on before us who kind of did a poem about the Holocaust.
I did a really long poem about the Holocaust. Yeah, Jewish guy. Well, I think he was. I don't know if he was Jewish.
I think he was Jewish. He was like his. He said he was Jewish.
Right.
But for my ancestors,
the compere then got up, and then he said, "Didn't say that we were doing comedy or anything." He said, "One way to wipe out a race is to gas them to death. Another way to wipe out a race is to steal all their wheat and leave them with blighted potatoes. And now, from Ireland, the Quack Squad.
We had
wigs on.
Yeah, with our wigs and our diddly idle songs. Thanks for the intro. Here we go. Let's try and cheer yous up now.
Oh, man. And he was quite proud of that intro. He seemed really like, I've got this great link.
Yeah.
So we did that and then came back. But then we did a sitcom as well, kind of a short one.
I think it was Ireland's first ever sitcom.
Yeah,
because it was situation comedy.
Was it Ireland's first ever sitcom?
I think so. Like, even though it was only like there were 10 minute or 12 minute episodes.
Yeah,
but there was like 12 of them, and it was a series. Yeah. And I don't think there'd been a proper actual like. A sitcom before that.
No.
This would have been around 1992 or something.
It was very anarchic. Very influenced by the Young Ones, I would say.
Flatheads.
Yeah, called Flatheads. But the writing of that, I have to say the writing of that was probably when our relationship began to deteriorate, I would say.
Mm,
no?
Possibly, yeah.
It was tough. We disagreed a lot.
Yeah,
and
probably.
There was a guy helping us and I wish he wasn't there. Because I thought he... I was...
Well, we won't say his name then if you wish he wasn't there.
Well, well, in a way...
I thought he was good at structure, though.
I suppose
and
structure.
We probably weren't.
We did need someone with structure, yeah. But I found sometimes he curbed the... I won't say enthusiasm. He curbs the madness.
Yeah, maybe.
A bit
yeah.
too much.
Yeah. I think probably when we anytime we were forced to sit in a room together and write as a job, that probably... I didn't like doing that myself, and I probably took it out on whoever was around me, and you were probably similar, or you know, like a,
well,
you,
like this, it's very hard.
When it becomes a job, like we had a great
also very, we
relationship
didn't,
as friends,
yes.
and we used to mess all the time,
yeah.
And kind of organically come up with stuff
yeah.
during all that sort of those years. But
and also, yeah. I didn't have any skill in letting something. Go, either did you, by the way, if you thought this is what should be in the script. Neither of us.
I thought it was funny. I thought it should stay in.
Yeah, but we would never, well, we one of us had to back down once, but we would fucking really push it, I think.
Yeah.
That guy had to sit there. Well, we are good stuff out.
That's probably
maybe I'm exaggerating it now,
yeah,
but
I don't know. Yeah, I think there was a lot of factors into what ends an act. An actor probably has its day as well. Like you know, we're still mates. We're still
yeah, but
friends.
We're lucky.
But the act
to be mates.
Yeah, well,
we pushed
yeah,
it. I think
I suppose
we
both pushed it at different. Like even you know, we did a series called Messrs. Tylak and Rooney as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that
was quite.
Oof.
A difficult time at
yeah,
times.
It was
you know,
difficult, yeah.
Working together when we probably shouldn't have worked together after the Flatheads, maybe.
Yeah, well, we didn't want... That wasn't something that we want. We
people
said
approached
about
us
to
do
go
that.
Back to
yeah.
do it together.
Yeah. And
yeah.
we probably already decided
and
we wanted
it was
to
like
go our separate ways then.
Someone forcing... Well, I was going to say Lennon and McCartney. It's like
Lennon
we are
McCartney
that good.
Of early Irish stage
yeah.
comedy.
but yeah, back together to do a thing, which was good, really. I think it was a good thing, but
well, we did the
TV3
first
three,
kind of naked
really
camera stuff on that. We did naked camera before naked camera.
Well, we did a hidden camera. Bit,
yeah, I mean,
yeah.
it was hidden
we're
camera.
We're doing
stuff.
Sketches as part of a... I love the idea. We had mad ideas, but they worked. Again, people go, no, you can't do that. But I remember we were going around to festivals interviewing people, chatting about the festival and all that. And then we'd put sketches in. But there was one guy, we were down at the surfing festival in Sligo. And I had this idea that we'd just walk into shot with you on my back. And then we'd start interviewing
yeah,
a
yeah.
guy. I love those ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
But people... didn't like or someone in TV3
I remember
was going,
you were interviewing a trainer at the Galway races.
Oh, that was
and
yeah.
what was it you
I started saying he was the guy who ran the whole of the Galway races
yeah.
like he organised it or whatever and we're walking along the track the racing track just talking and then I was going do the horses get drug tested and he goes yes they get tested after every race and he's going how would you know if they were taking drugs like would they be talking a lot before the races like,
or,
and I kept pushing it and then he stopped
snorting and stuff
yeah,
yeah.
and
yeah,
he went
he got really annoyed
I don't like the way this interview is going he
yeah.
was no crack
yeah,
at all.
Yeah.
and
But your whole thing was that the horses were taking the drugs themselves.
Yeah.
That, like, they had a habit and they were, rather than anyone giving them drugs. Like
yeah.
That.
And I think he just didn't like the idea of inferring that horses were under. I don't know.
And we went down to Lisdoon Varna and.
Oh, God. That
I
was...
won the Bachelor thing. It was some, there was
there
some.
There was a.
What was it?
Bachelor. It was, so it was a Bachelor festival, right?
Yeah.
And. There was one thing where you, it was like a blind date maybe
yeah,
kind of
a,
thing.
It
where
was a
but
big
you
competition
had to,
in there.
You
yeah.
had to be interviewed before you even were allowed to do the
yeah.
competition.
Yeah.
And we both went in as different. I was an Italian guy with a ponytail.
Yeah, and I was American web designer.
Yeah.
And you came first and second in it anyway.
Yeah, it was going well for me until I drank too much and I just went a bit mental. I think I even lost my accent. But otherwise, I was...
Got a, I
had to dance with women and everything.
Yeah, we danced with women and we were voted. They voted. The public voted. That was in there.
Yeah.
And I got to sing. My party piece was to sing Dirty Old Town. And I thought, if I sing it really Dublin like that, they're obviously going to hopefully they'll realise this is a joke, but they still didn't get it. Because I was talking like this really nice American guy.
And then you're like,
designs website, and they're like, Dirty Old Town! It's like, surely they're going to cop this. But no.
But that was after, we'd split up initially. But,
we're pretending to be
Did
friends.
You think there was some... It was tough doing... We did some...
I think if you spend years and years with someone...
Yeah.
Because like, we probably...
We also had...
Spend so much time together that the person just gets on your tits.
Yeah. But I have to say this now, right? Some of your friends gave me shit. I won't name them. I actually... Two in particular, one night, said, "Oh, we were doing a thing on kids bro. It was a
Joe Maxi,
right? Yeah. We were doing sketches on Joe Maxi. There'd be one every week, and this girl and a fella said, "Oh, we saw yous on Joe Maxi the other night." And I go, "Oh yeah, did you? Expecting them to go. Yeah, it was great." And they went, "Yeah, Paul was brilliant. You were shit." They actually said that to me.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Well, that's terrible.
and I didn't know what. I was like,
they were probably just jealous of you being my friend more than them.
I don't know. Anyway, yeah. So it's very hard to keep a relationship.
Well, you never told me that.
It was really shocking.
Maybe if you'd said it to me, I could have talked to them about... Oh, shit.
You spilled coffee there. Sorry, did I?
I could have said something to them. Like,
right, okay,
what the hell are you doing talking to my mate?
Yeah, but I think they were a little bit...
Out of it.
Out of it as well. They didn't realise that they were being exceptionally rude and cruel.
Yeah.
But and
was
I
that why...
No, there was...
You never told me that. So.
Well, I mean, I always got the impression that all your friends thought you were brilliant and that I was shit.
Well, you never told me that either.
Oh, no, but I didn't feel I could say it because maybe part of me thought I was shit as well.
Well,
and,
I think you're brilliant.
Also, I was... I don't know, why we're going to say it because I was in... Yeah. There's a couple of relationships we were in that maybe didn't help our relationship. Would you agree with that?
I would, yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. There was a few. Mm. Well, one in particular, I think.
Yeah.
It was an American lady that I didn't get on with.
Yeah.
That was probably the first big relationship that kind of got... It was the Yoko Ono thing, probably.
Right, okay. But then you had some fairly...
Crazy.
Did I say junkie friends?
Maybe.
Anyway, yeah.
Not anymore.
Yeah, so that's good. Yeah. But I mean, like, I have to say, I don't know how long we have left here because there's people trying to get into this room. Before we finish up, I want to say, Paul, I'll say this publicly, you're really my best friend. And when I was absolutely, maybe a couple of years ago, just banjaxed psychologically or whatever, you were the one person that came to my rescue, so thanks.
That's very nice of you.
And when you're really fucked, you know who your friends are.
Yeah, and that's true. Yeah.
So, thanks.
Well, you're all right now, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Can I plug my website?
Brilliant. Yeah.
Hey. Seeing as you're such a good friend, vo.ie.
I said no.
Well, you can cut it out.
yeah.
If you're looking for animation voiceovers or accents, impressions, whatever, vo.ie. That's all I'll say.
Vo.ie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. And I have a thing coming out called Informer as well on the BBC. Which is
Tell me about that, because you've been over to London doing stuff.
Well, since I did Halal Daddy, I there was a good few Asian people on that.
Yeah.
And they were saying, oh, you should definitely come to London and there's a lot more work. So I decided after Halal Daddy to approach the agents of all the people who were in the thing with me to try and get one agent at least. And I did. I got one in mm-hmm. the end. And they sent me a self-tape. That was the first tape they sent me out to do before they'd even signed me up. And then I got this part out of it called Informer. That's a six-hour-long thriller on BBC One and Amazon.
Wow.
And it would be out in summer 2018. And I'm really delighted to be doing it. This is a nice meaty part. And you know, yeah. I like doing accents and characters. So it has both of that in it. So East London Asian character like that, you know.
Nice one.
I'm the dad of the Informer, who's the title character in it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, Paddy Considine's the main police guy in it.
Really?
Yeah, it's a good story, actually. This young guy, my son, he's caught with a few pills.
Don't spoil it now. But
yeah, no, it's just that's okay. Just the very start.
Okay, yeah.
I won't tell you anymore. He's caught with some pills and he's flipped by the police. Paddy Considine flips him. And my son is played by Naban Rizwan, who's a new talent. He's only 20 years old and he's amazing. And there's a lot of Asian and African and Middle Eastern people in the cast. And
cool.
A great cast of whites as well.
Right, yeah, yeah. And are you finished shooting that now? Or
No. Well, I don't know whenever this is going out, but maybe, depending on when this is going out, but I'll be...
next week.
Oh, well then, I'll be finished early February.
Wow. So, wow, got a bit more to do.
Yeah.
So you're over and back to London all the time.
Yeah, I've another kind of half of my stuff to do there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's great. Yeah, it's a good part. And I suppose that all came from doing Halal Daddy, which is...
Yeah.
Good comedy film that was out a while ago, and with Art Malik and Nikesh Patel.
Yeah, yeah,
who are lovely guys.
That's class. And you do a lot of animation as well.
Yeah, I do. I try to do. I mean, if people are interested, vo.ie is where my stuff is all. You know, there's a showcase of animation stuff that I've done and an idea of the characters and accents that I like to do. Mm. But I could do any accent and any impression if given a day to practice, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved... It's the same as when we started out. I've always loved doing just characters that you make up straight away and you stick with them then for the whole sketch,
yeah.
Basically. I think in a lot of animation... They let you play around with stuff and you come up with something that you've never done before and you're laughing your head off at it yourself. So you just do that then for a whole hour or something.
Mm.
It's just great fun. And then you just throw it away. You know, and then they want you to do it again and you just have to can't even remember what I did like 3 or 4 weeks later.
Yeah.
So they have to play it back to you. So
yeah.
Otherwise you'll just forget it. You know?
Right, yeah.
But it's like, I that all goes back to me. Like even when I lived in England, I used to tape stuff and I used to listen to, you know, like try and make myself laugh. And then when we were doing stuff together, like that was, it's all that kind of character, kind of accents and all that.
Yeah.
Madness, you know.
I love that as part, love doing improv as well, which we work together doing a lot of improv. And,
oh, yeah. And the International Monday Nights, 9 o'clock every Monday, if you're in any way out and about.
Yeah. I know we've been doing that for years now and... I just love it. I mean, it's probably, I would say above stand-up, I prefer doing it. But it's just, you don't get an audience for it. But we do get an audience, but not enough to...
Yeah, when we do the festivals, we get big audiences. Or if it's, sometimes the International will be packed for some reason, either because we've advertised it heavily or just randomly. And it'll be
great. I'm saying we can't tour it. I would love to tour it, but it's a difficult thing to get people's head around. People go, what's improv? Improve? Yeah. Or something.
It's just the most fun you can have as a performer, really.
And to watch.
Yeah.
And it's always different.
Yeah.
And we both, I suppose mostly half the audience we get are actually not Irish. We get a lot of foreign.
Which is good for them because I think they find stand-up a bit difficult at times because it can be a bit too subtle and a bit too static. Mm-hmm. But with us, with the improv, we're moving around, we're making shapes, and we're really kind of, I think for some reason, like, well, probably that reason, and other reasons, the audience finds that a lot more entertaining if English isn't their first language.
Yeah, and I think also a lot of America, we get a lot of American tourists, and I think they are more aware of comedy improv.
It's
a big thing.
Yeah, the Americans and the Dutch seem to have a lot of their own improv groups.
Yeah.
And they're actually from improv groups.
We do get a lot of people coming up afterwards and go, I'm in an improv group in Chicago or New York or something.
Join your group?
And we just say no.
We never do workshops or anything.
And who did we have in the other month or two ago? Chris Martin.
Chris Martin from Coldplay.
From Coldplay.
I wasn't there, but apparently it was great.
Yeah. Were you not there?
No. Were you there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
wasn't there, no.
I thought you were there that night.
No,
it was Kevin Gildee and Danny Keough and Ian Coppinger.
Yeah.
That's right, I don't know why.
Kevin Gildee did Jupiter stand in there as well. And
We
had Adam Hill one night, I remember, years ago.
Yeah.
Who else? Is that just going down? That's actually getting less and less famous, am I?
Yeah.
And then we had Trev Jones.
Listen, thanks. I guess we could chat again some other time, I think, because we haven't talked about the whole exhibition to Antarctica we did together.
No, yeah.
I don't know how we.
That's when I had a breakdown, and you were there for me. Yeah. I was like, what are we fucking doing here? Like, this is a continent, it's not just a bloody trip.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
HPN, the Headstuff Podcast Network. See headstuff.org for more details.